Welcome to Bending the Arc. Bending the Arc is an offering of the Shasta Equal Justice Coalition. And in this show, we hold conversations with leaders in our community and community residents who are working for equal justice in a variety of ways. Today, we're speaking to Donnie Chamberlain. Donnie is owner and founder of a news cafe, news found online, investigative journalism. And Donnie has been on the front line of receiving a great deal of harassment and bullying. The existence of these threats and bullying is a question that we're bringing to more and more leaders, lawyers, the U.S. attorney. We're asking what can be done because of the impact on democratic processes, access to equal justice, and people's safety, perceived and real, in showing up and speaking out. In this conversation, you'll hear more about what Donnie does, what's been happening, how she navigates it, and also what are some strategies that she has used and is hoping to foster to counteract some of these trends.
For the time is drawing near.
Today, my guest is Donnie Chamberlain. And Donnie, as you know, I like to give guests an opportunity to introduce themselves however they see fit for the conversation that lies ahead. So how would you like to present yourself?
Well, thank you for having me. This is awesome. How do I describe myself? I've lived in Reading my entire life, mostly since I was about five. We came from Canada on a train, and my mother was a New Yorker who hated Reading from the moment she arrived. And I picked up a little of that, and I've always felt like an apologist for Shasta County a bit, but now I feel like I'm a champion for its very survival. But anyway, so I own a news cafe, and I'm a publisher and owner and journalist, trained journalist, and that's very important to me. In fact, I think one of my greatest accomplishments was as a single mom with three kids who were all kind of in like junior high school, going to Chico and making that drive for 2 years and getting my degree. And so a news cafe at this point has a larger editorial staff than the Record Searchlight, which I was a journalist and a columnist there for 10 years, their first designated columnist. I was also the food editor and writer and a feature writer. And so I've sort of evolved over the years with a news cafe. And I'm a grandmother. I'm a twin, identical twin. I'm a sister. I do gardening for therapy and cooking for therapy. And I have a tree house for therapy. So I have all these things in my life that I do to ensure that the stress doesn't just kill me, because it is a very stressful job. And I don't like to me, I almost said, I don't like to complain about it. I don't talk about it a lot. That's, you just do your job. But there's a lot of stress that does come with it.
Yeah. Well, and I'm so glad you talked about that. That's one of the things I really wanted to talk to you about today. And also, I have another show on mindfulness. And that for me, the work for equal justice and the work to be healthy, to be able to self-regulate, whether it's law enforcement or us as people trying to engage in democratic processes, is so critical.
Right. You have to balance it out. So it's heavy lifting to bring justice to a community, to a topic. And there's a lot of blowback and a lot of threats and death threats even. And so I have to balance it out. And I've become so much better at saying no. I mean, I'm sort of I'm an empath, just the way I was raised. I'm one of those giver people, pleaser people. And I really am learning how at my advanced stage of life, I'm 67, I don't feel it. But to just say no, to just sit with something and just think about it and say, is that good for me? Is it something I can do? Is something I want to do? No. And I try really hard not to say, I'm so sorry, you know, just because. And I think people respect your boundaries better anyway. And if I do something, it's because I really want to.
Mm-hmm.
Like
this. Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks. Yeah, boundaries is critical.
It is absolutely critical.
Real self-care.
Right.
So how do you describe a news cafe? I've talked to my friends. It's like an online newspaper, you know, mm-hmm. but how do you describe it, and how did it come about to be what it is today?
Well, actually, this is a news cafe's 16th birthday month. Mm. We're 16 years old this year, and I came from newspapers, and then in 2007, at the start of the Great Recession, newspapers were dumping reporters and staff, and newspapers were closing, and so I was part of the Great Flush, and I won't go too much into that, but I did not jump. I was pushed, and so I had to reinvent myself. My youngest son, who then lived in the Czech Republic, knew I was depressed. I mean, I was in my pajamas all day and drinking Bailey's Irish cream for breakfast, and I'd worked so hard to get where I was as a journalist, and then to lose my job just like that. 100 people picketed the newspaper when the Record Searchlight let me go. And then I was fired on a Wednesday, and by a Sunday, my son, Joe, sent me a little link. He goes, Mom, why don't you try a blog? And I said, I hate online. I'm really more of a paper person. And he was worried about me, my mental health. And so I started this little blog, and I was married then, and we lived out in Igo. And I just took a big, deep breath, and I said, I'm just going to write about living out in Igo and my golden retriever and my lovely husband and my great life and my wonderful dream house. And then, as life sometimes happens, you know, everything changed. I went through a divorce, a lot of betrayal, and I just kept recalibrating. And in the beginning, I was picking up Record Searchlight people like popcorn off the ground. People just kept losing their jobs. So now a news cafe, we have a number of trained journalists, you know, John Lewis and George Winship and R.V. Scheid and myself. And I know Mike Chapman, who's awesome. He just wrote a story about the ACID canal this week. Mm-hmm. And then we have two what I call reporters, people who are not trained journalists but have college degrees and are writers. And that is Liz Mary, who covers Tehama County, and Sean Schwaller, who is a PhD history professor from Chico. So they're not trained journalists, but I call them reporters. And we have video people and audio people, and I pay them all. There are no volunteers. And I used to try to do the newspaper model of just going out there. I'd get dressed up with my little briefcase and knock on doors and beg for advertisers. I don't do that anymore. I have Shasta College is our longest, you know, advertiser. They're with us every year. But they know. They're smart. We get 100,000 unique visitors a month without even trying. I'm not a great business person. I have ADHD. I seriously do. And so spinning all these plates is difficult. And things have just worked out for me. Good things come to good people, I think, sometimes. And now we're almost entirely supported by voluntary subscribers. Mm. And you know, I tried for a brief period of time doing a paywall when we almost tanked in 2017. We lost three big advertisers at the same time. And I said, okay, I should have quit. I should have just closed up shop. But no, I said, let's try a paywall. And everybody hated it, including me, because I believe a free press should be free. I mean, every time somebody will go, hey, you should read this article in the LA Times, the New York Times, and you open it and boom, there's a paywall. And I have a lot of subscriptions to a lot of papers, but I think it should be free. So now our subscribers, they range from people who give $1.35 a month, $5 a month, $10 a month, $15, $20. And then as you get higher, the numbers drop off. We have a couple who give $200 a month. And then we have one benefactor gentleman who wants to be anonymous. He owns a vineyard in Fairfield, and he has been watching a news cafe from the beginning of the Shasta County explosion 3 years ago, and he sends us, every month I expect the checks to stop, but they don't. And I get teared up thinking about it. His daughter is a journalist, and one of the first things he said was, the first check I send you, I want you to put cameras around your house. I want you to have a gate. I want you to be secure and safe. So it's by the grace of these people who give to us, we know that only 1% of our 100,000 unique visitors are supporters, financial supporters, 1%. You can do the math. So it's less than 1,000 people. Mm-hmm. So that's what we do. And I'm grateful every day. And I look at it like I'm riding this train, just going through full speed ahead until it doesn't work anymore. If people start dropping off, if they cancel subscriptions, if they don't want to do it anymore, then I'll get a clue and say, looks like my time is up here.
And what's your vision of what a news cafe offers our county and community and what you would like to see going forward?
I'm not one of those people who do, I don't do mission statements. I don't do long-term plans. I just try to be nimble and quick, but I feel like this, what we provide the community, and I hear this over and over, a news cafe is providing news that we don't hear anywhere else, partly because, you know, the journalists among us, RV and myself in particular, we are journalists. We write news. We also write opinion. And that bothers a lot of people. And it's just our style. And there's this thing in journalism 1A, there's both sides of the story. Okay, militia member who assaulted somebody, why don't you explain your side for us? Donnie, why don't you explain your side? And so RV and I are on the same page, and we say, in this era, with the county on fire, when horrible things are happening, and there's a lot of people who are doing things that are not telling the truth about what they're doing or why they're doing it, we are throwing the both-sidism out the window. So I often will not, you know, in the old days, I'd do a story and I'd get both sides. Now, well, let's use Carlos Zapata as an example. He's with the militia. He's one of the first. He's kind of gone underground recently. He has complained greatly. Why won't she interview me? And I say, because I know that you have a history of not telling the truth when you're interviewed. I've seen it on media from around the world, CNN, you know. And he puts a spin on it that is not truthful. But what I do then is go to his social media sites. We have thousands of memes. We have files just on Carlos Zapata. His own words, audio clips, video clips, memes, you know, pulled out, screen grabs. And there he is, and he's basically shown himself, and that's what we use, almost as if I interviewed him, and if he was taking a truth serum and had to say exactly what he really believes. So that's what we do. So we're in a weird era. You know how, like, during wars, like, let's say the Civil War, and you have a house, and then all of a sudden there are soldiers coming by, and your house is taken over to be like a hospital and bandages, and everybody pitches in. I kind of look at a news cafe that way. Like, I would be perfectly happy writing recipes and feature stories about interesting people, but I feel like we've been taken over and we are having to change into an emergency mode, like a MASH center, and writing stories that are not, honestly, not fun to write. Because we know when we do, we get a lot of pushback. People have made sites up and, you know, mocked us and taken horrible pictures of me and people on my staff, and they say terrible things. They've dug up personal information. It comes with a price to tell the truth like that.
And actually, I teach sociology of mass media as one of the courses, and there are different genres of journalism.
Sure.
All of them really keeping with the same ethics of fact-checking.
Absolutely.
And mm-hmm. and how you present, but those advocacy or interpretation, right. Those are forms of journalism.
Exactly.
As well.
You have, and that's like on our staff. I'm more advocacy, so is RV. And you have somebody like George Winship, who is a straight line. John Lewis is the same way. I've asked them, hey, you guys want to write an opinion piece? And John Lewis will say, no, they're not comfortable with that. That's the way they were trained, and I so respect that. You know, and then we have opinion pieces and Q&As. There are so many ways to get the word out. But the tenet of it is to be accurate, to quote people accurately. I pretend like if I'm interviewing you and you say something and I write it, that you can bring up a recording later and go, look what I recorded, and that doesn't match. So that's how we do things.
And what do you see is the role of an organization and offering like a news cafe in an environment And we can just say a national environment where local news is on the decline.
I am so grateful that I am locally owned, locally operated. I'm not owned by a corporation like Sinclair Broadcasting or Gannett News or Google. And I'm beholden to no one. And even my subscribers, I've had people say, well, I'm a subscriber and I pay you $5 a month and I don't really like when you do that. So I'm going to go away. And I'll say, well, we'll miss you. I mean, you know, I always take whatever someone says to me, I take every bit of criticism seriously. Every comment, I take it all seriously. But I'm not going to change the way I do journalism because people think, you know, they want to get back to me doing recipes full time. It's like, I can't, it's like saying your house is on fire and let's go bake a cake. No, you have to work on putting out the fire, finding out what caused the fire, making sure the fire doesn't happen again. And you know what? When all that is done, someday we can go back and bake cookies in the kitchen.
You've been in this profession for a really long
30
time.
30 years. I cannot believe it.
Yeah. What are some of the most significant changes that you have seen in, and let's say in the field or how journalism is practiced and received in a county like ours?
Well, you know, in the day, everybody was a subscriber to the newspaper. I used to see those little Record Searchlight orange tubes. And by the way, I love the people who are at the Record Searchlight. They're my former colleagues. What they're doing is such difficult, difficult work, you know? Mm-hmm. But back in the day when I was there in the, you know, mid-90s until 2007 when I was removed, those were the glory years. You had a full copy desk. You had artists. You had, you know, local salespeople. You had an editorial board who wrote opinions about things that were going on in the community. You had a full newsroom. I mean, still to this day, whenever I see a movie or something about this, I just get almost goosebumps. It's a noisy place. Reporters sitting like as far as you and I are on the phone with different conversations, typing. Accuracy was, I mean, the Record Searchlight editors, Greg Clark, who was my managing editor, awesome. Awesome, old school, ethical journalist. And now the building is sold. The presses are gone. There's a little skeleton crew. I've never seen their office at somewhere downtown. I suspect their readership has tanked. And the reason I suspect that is they're no longer participating in contests because the contests are determined by what category you're in. So like I'm in the 100,000. I keep mentioning that number. I'm proud of it. 100,000 or more unique visitor, which puts me in the ballpark with a lot of other bigger markets, which is uncomfortable sometimes. But the paper is just dying. I keep waiting. I don't know what would happen the day that the paper went away. And I think it will because it's like a little bar of soap that just keeps getting whittled down and whittled down by hot water. And pretty soon it's just like a sliver, which is where it is now. And I know Mike Mangus and KRCR, I consider them all newspapers are just dying up. And when newspapers die, then nobody is there to sit through an 8-hour meeting to tell you what terrible thing has just happened to your community. It's like those horrible meetings, board meetings, school board meetings, city council meetings. They're boring. I know they are. But that's like the broccoli on your plate that you have to have for nutrition. You can't just have the fluffy jello with whipped cream at the end, you know? It's crucial. And when nobody's watching, it's like that game we played when we were kids, red light, green light. It's like a green light, and people who are inclined to do bad things or want to take the county in a unfortunate, dark direction, the public is not aware, and so they can't stand up and say stop because they don't know.
If we could begin with you sharing the kinds of things you've been subjected to, and to give people a landscape for what it's like to be in a position like yours.
The very first time that I ever had a death threat was actually at the Record Searchlight from the Williams brothers, because I had a Jewish last name then, Greenberg. And so I was getting death threats from jail. Who knew they could do that? 6,000 Jews, a good start. FBI came in. The bulletproof glass that was installed at the Record Searchlight was because of those death threats. And that was it. And then you'd get nasty phone calls and people would come into the paper, but nothing like it is now. I'd say 3.5 years ago when COVID hit, that's kind of when things went sour. And I think my first death threat was from a militia leader. His name is Jesse Lane, who has stake in NorCal militia group. And I had written sort of a tongue-in-cheek letter to Gavin Newsom. Dear Gavin Newsom, I don't know if you've been up to Shasta County. It's the place where the majority of people wanted you recalled, but please don't hold that against us. But I thought you should know what's going on here in terms of the state mandates about the pandemic and rodeos going on. You know, it's like, you know, they weren't complying, and Karen Ramstrom and Donnell Ewert, people just getting run out of the county government. You could see, it was like, I looked at it like a pirate ship being overtaken. We have a, you know, Shasta County was an okay ship. It had its flaws, but pirates have taken it over and kicked off the good people into the ocean, and they're in charge now. And so I wrote something like that. It was all tongue in cheek. Well, people went crazy. They said, how dare you write a letter to the governor? I'd like to think he did see the column, but it wasn't really a letter. And so Jesse Lane said, we need to remove Donnie Chamberlain from life as she knows it here in Shasta County. I reported to the FBI. Nothing ever happened. We've had, I had death threats from a guy. His name is Thomas Connolly, and he was actually doing death threats against Fauci, Anthony Fauci, and his family. This guy was like, I'm going to get a baseball bat and bash your teeth in. I'm going to pour gasoline down your throat. He called me a kike, which made me wonder about how much he knew about my history. I'm going to track you down. I'm going to find you. I'm going to beat you like the dog you are. And I actually published that, and an agent on the East Coast saw that. They had search filter terms, and part of what enabled them to find this guy, he's now in prison, was because I published that. And, you know, keywords like baseball bat, dog, gasoline. So that happened. And then I started getting anonymous, words, calling me names that I couldn't say on the air without the FCC, if it was paying attention, coming in and, causing it a violation. So calling it a violation. My mother used to say nobody likes a whiner. And so I try not to be a whiner. I try not to talk about this a lot. And I try not to give the people who are threatening me the satisfaction of knowing that I'm afraid. I had a friend whose tires were slashed in a meeting where he was the only progressive guy there. So now I take Uber to night meetings, always. I have 2 security gates on my property. My son Joe, who started a news cafe, who's now at UC Berkeley, He did cameras all around my property. I'm not paranoid. I don't sit at home wringing my hands, looking out the drapes, waiting for someone to come and get me. But I'm careful. I move my bedroom to the middle of my house because at night I'd picture somebody driving by my house with an AK-47 and shooting out my front windows. I've taken all the precautions I can. I don't have a gun. I don't want a gun. But the death threats are real. RV has had the same. Sean has also had threats, but not to the same degree I have. And I think in great part it's because I'm a woman. And a lot of these macho, angry, disenfranchised guys can't stand a woman telling them what she thinks, what she believes, or calling them out on their baloney. They don't like it. And somebody like me should go back to making cookies. And I always say, I mean, it cracks me up. I hate to admit that I like to cook. Why don't you just go back in the kitchen and make cookies? I can do both, actually. I can be a grandmother, and I can sit in my treehouse, and I can garden. But I can also hold people's feet to the fire and say what's true. And the thing, the side effect that's happened, not just with me having threats, but one of the News Cafe's longtime readers, he had a full-on recorded death threat from Carlos Zapata on his phone, which we published on a News Cafe. It even had caller ID, Emiliano Zapata, you know. Guess what? That was reported to RPD, the FBI, Shasta County Sheriff. Guess what happened? Nothing. You know, so that is the thing that's most chilling to me was you think, well, if somebody does something to me, I'm just going to go to the police. I'm going to go to law enforcement. Well, what we've discovered in a news cafe is there are some law enforcement who are sympathetic with the militia and extremism. And I don't want to say all militia is bad. I know some guys and women who've joined the militia because they go, we just want to protect our neighborhoods and we want to be safe. I think there are people like that. I'm talking about the hardcore extremist people, you know. So what we have discovered is we've reported every death threat. Nothing happens. I was assaulted in July, on July 6th, by Mark Kent. It was at a meeting organized by Jesse Lane, my first death threater. And I wouldn't leave. I said I had a First Amendment right to be there. It was broadcast on social media. Everybody come, Americans, business people, concerned citizens. I checked all those boxes. And I'm often, media is often not welcome. I've been called fake news, you know, yelled at, and I just stand my ground with my notebook and my pen. And I, for some reason, I had this bizarre false sense of security, like I'm protected. And so it was like a receiving line of people yelling at me, telling me to leave, and I just stood my ground, kept, I'm just going to stand against this back wall, back and center is where I usually go, and I'm recording on Facebook Live. That's all I'm doing. No, you're not. And he grabbed, my phone had an 18-inch thick lanyard that I'd wear on my neck while I was holding the camera, and Mark Kent, who is 300 plus pounds if he's an ounce and 6 foot whatever, toe to toe with me, grabbed my camera and yanked it up above my head, and I was like being hanged by my own lanyard. And I felt something kind of snap, like it was because the strap couldn't come off, and so it was behind. But I was so freaked out, I think I just sort of disassociated. You know, when you have the kind of childhood I do, I'm really good at enduring pain and suffering. I have a great pain threshold, so I just checked out, kind of. And for 23 minutes, I was the hole in a human donut. They wouldn't let me film. Held up their hands. If I tried to move, they moved. At one point, I tried to run across the room, and they followed me and encircled me. And they called 911 and reported me. And three cruisers, four deputies showed up and escorted me out. This is in a community where they had to have the militia because law enforcement wouldn't come out if they had a crime there. It was amazing, and I was treated as the criminal. I told the officer who took me out, I should have said, no, I'm not leaving. And he said, had you done that, you know, we would have taken you by force in our cruiser and taken you to the Shasta County Jail and arrested you and booked you. So I'm glad I didn't do that, but that's where we are. And I reported it, a detailed report to the sheriff's department, complete with videos, audio. There's a filmmaker doing a film eventually about Shasta County. He had me wired. He's independent. He's not with a news cafe. So we have the whole audio of it. I turned it all in. The sheriff didn't find any reason to charge Mark Kent. It's passed on to the district attorney. And there are a number of cases that have involved militia and law enforcement around here. The dog mauling of a kid out in Bella Vista. Nothing ever happened. The West Valley football hazing, some of those coaches were militia members. Some of the deputies who investigated it were former football players. So that's where we are. I'm proud a news cafe was instrumental in getting one of those deputies. His name is Greg Walker, removed. He's no longer a deputy. Guess where he works now? He works at Mercy Hospital as a security guard. These guys get away with it, and I think it emboldens them.
We've worked with people who have pursued issues that, for example, seem to us like the definition of hate crime.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that we've learned and heard is that the parameters, certainly those things are up for interpretation, but that some of the actors know those parameters very well, are careful to step outside of them. So I'm wondering what kind of things you're hearing about what qualifies as a threat or what would institute a response.
Well, see, with the sheriff's report regarding this case I'm talking about with Mark Kent, they lied. He said, I didn't touch her. I didn't lay a hand on her camera. I put my palm in front of her camera so she wouldn't film. They all lied, and 200 people were there, and they're all siding with him. But guess what? Just recently, one witness came to me. And she was crying. She said, I'm so ashamed I didn't come forward sooner, but I was afraid. So there is one witness. But, you know, like in the case of right across the street, there's a conservative talk show stations on KCNR, and one was Liberty Unabashed, and this guy Matt Nemo suggested that because of me being a socialist, communist, Nazi person, that I deserve to be publicly executed, that communists like me, the only way that I learn is to be dragged behind a car and have my neck stretched. So I reported that to the police. Police, you know, talked to me, and they said, you know, the thing is that he said she should be. He didn't say I. I'm saying, well, he has listeners. So that's the thing that bothers me. And actually, in that case, it was kind of funny. R.V. Scheid wrote a story about the threats. We did audio of it. And then Matt Nemo, the guy who said those things about me, sued us for defamation. So we got a lawyer, and our lawyer said, I'm like, all we said was what he said. The defense for libel, slander, defamation, all of that is truth. Was it true? Yeah, we spoke the truth. So we countersued and we won. And it was a big deal. And I don't like going to court. And then that same person, I got a restraining order. He appealed it. We won. So we won in court twice. We won the defamation suit. We got like $700. I split it with RV because he wrote the story.
The other thing you mentioned, which seems to me underappreciated, is the gendered nature of a lot of these attacks. And there are quite a few books out detail how it differs and how much of it is against women. What have you seen both locally and nationally about that?
Well, very clearly, a lot of these guys on these radio shows, they'll go after our registrar of voters, for example. They'll talk about what her body would look like in a bathing suit. Carlos Zapata, during an open meeting where they breached the board chambers, he just got up and just tore into me verbally. Nobody there to stop him. He talked about my divorce, how I'm a miserable human being. I can't stay with a man. I'm sorry you're so miserable because your husband cheated on you. I mean, things like that. So they go after, they just go after you at a core. You're not very attractive. You're ugly. They'll post pictures of me. Like, who looks good with their chin down and double chins from the side? Nobody. Their blueprint, red, white, and blueprint, is working to some degree, because all the news that goes out across the country, so that sane people don't want to. I wouldn't want to come here and apply for a job in Shasta County in Redding, California. But someone who believes like the extremists, they go, that's where I want to go. So there's like this balance, like this teeter-totter, where every time somebody moves out of Shasta County, how many times do you see on Facebook, I'm out of here. It's not going to change in my lifetime. I don't want to raise my grandkids here. I'm out of here. Every time someone like that leaves, I mourn. A lot of these people who are changing Shasta County to make America great, can you hear my air quote again? They're not even from here. And I get so angry, and I sometimes feel like I wasn't born here, so I'm a newcomer, right? But I've been here since I was 5 years old. I went to Pine Street School. I was raised, grew up in the Shasta County school system. I went to Shasta College, Chico State. I am local, about as local as you can get, right? And it makes me so angry that people from somewhere else have come here and decided they want to make Shasta County into their own image. It infuriates me.
Has anyone come to you to say, let me take on that piece? Any other organizations that are attending to what's happening here, as far as you know?
Well, I know that there are a lot of organizations like the Southern Poverty Law Center, first name basis with a woman there. There are good organizations, justice-seeking organizations that are also watching us, right? And so my philosophy is I can't just jump up and down and say, that's not fair. I reported that. Nothing happened. So I just keep doing what I'm doing, and I keep reporting it. And when I'm reporting it, it's not in a vacuum. The public is learning. We have people like the guy who is the winery in Fairfield who appreciates our work and continues to fund us, and funding us allows me to pay reporters and videographers and people like that. So as long as we can keep doing it, then it might be nothing more than a historical reference at some point. So maybe right now things aren't being done. Right now there's no consequences. But down the road, God forbid, if something terrible happens, then we have a record of all these stories, thousands and thousands and thousands of words we've written about all this. Not saying we told you so, but it's like just sounding the alarm. The place is on fire, you guys. Who doesn't have to work all day? Who doesn't have other things to do? And that's why it's so important that we attend and show up. But like Mary Rickert, for example, has thrown her hat in the ring to run for a third term, you know.
Someone else who's gotten a lot of
unbelievable, unspeakable things. She's a grandmother in her 70s, for Pete's sake. She's a rancher. She is one of those. I look at her like Joan of Arc. And Kathy Darling Allen, I look at the same way. Two strong women. They're not obnoxious. They're just standing their ground. They're both women of faith. But for her to now throw her hat in the ring, Reverge Anselmo, in the last days, has given $16,000 to Wynn Carpenter, who is her opponent, his campaign. How can someone like Mary Rickert, how can anybody compete with a millionaire? And what they do with that money is they flood the market with these despicable ads, and they almost always start like this. Did you know? And then they'll say some lie. And I think that's pretty psychologically clever, isn't it? People perk up. Did you know that this person was stealing money from the county? Did you know? And so the obvious answer in your head is, no, I didn't know that. Well, the question they should be asking themselves is that true? No, it's not. It's so powerful. And there's a thing called the truth in advertising law that is not enforced here. I mean, a lot of these radio and TV stations around here have made, you know, thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars running ads that were obviously false. And I've contacted some and said, do you know this is false, right? RV has wrote a whole series about here are the lies in the ads. They kept going. Nothing has happened.
Is that question, did you know, is that a sidestep that you can't get pinned for because you're not saying it?
That's brilliant. That's a really good question. Maybe that's their loophole. I didn't say it's true. I've heard people say, you know what? I don't think it's just Reverge Anselmo who wants revenge. Some people think that there's something beyond Reverge Anselmo, that Shasta County is like a test case. It's this little petri dish, this blood red county in a big blue state, and people are coming here, and their blueprint, red, white, and blueprint, is working to some degree, because all the news that goes out, it makes me so angry that people from somewhere else have come here and decided they want to make Shasta County into their own image.
I regularly get, here's what The Guardian said about you, or here's what LA Times, or here's the New York Times article. And some of those are progressive views. Yeah. What's your sense of how that changes dynamics for us, besides the advertisement for people who want to be in a place like that or don't want to be in a place like that?
These guys are proud of it. We're on the map, folks. You know, when you have The Guardian and CNN and this may be their proudest moment. And what worries me most is that they say things like, about the hand count, for example, this is the hill we're going to die on. They're pushing for open carry. Did you know Shasta County has the highest per capita CCW rate in California? Well, guess what? That's nothing. Because a lot of these guys, they don't believe. They believe it's our supervisor, Chris Kellstrom, says, he said it during forums, it's my God-given right to carry a weapon, and I don't need a government's permission to get a permit. I think if we had any idea how many people out there are carrying weapons without a permit, I mean, we would be blown away. So I do, when I say worry, I'm concerned, because they're all armed, loaded weapons. Woody Clendenin says the only time he doesn't have a loaded weapon on him is when he's in the shower. And a lot of these guys believe like that. They have a junior militia, you know, kind of targeting young boys, especially from single moms. The dad's not in the picture. They're going to teach these boys how to be strong. So they're raising them up young. And I worry at some point it'll be like a Waco, Texas kind of situation where that is the hill they're going to die on. And I think that is why law enforcement doesn't have consequences for these guys. I think our sheriff, our district attorney, does not want to be the one to push back on these guys. Carlos Zapata says, you have a problem? You know, FBI, ABC, health department comes showing up on your business. Call me. I can have 1,000 militia members there. So that's, you know, who would want that on their watch? So I think they're just trying to keep, you know, our sheriff, our DA, they're trying to keep this lid on this simmering pot and not let it boil over and not confront it, because you know, they don't want Shasta County to go down in history as a place where a bunch of people decided this was a place to the hill to die on. I don't expect people to be really, really brave and go to protests and stuff if that's not their jam, but everybody can vote. Get off your couch and vote. And that is the most, one of the most powerful things at all. You can be 92 years old and vote. You can be in a wheelchair and vote. You can be, you know, vote. And that's why it's so important. That's why this whole thing about the hand counting is so frightening. I do not want those guys counting my vote. No, thank you. You know, and I've heard, I don't know if you've heard this, but we were nervous about this latest November election. And we heard that Patrick Jones told some radio show, yeah, we're not that interested. This is a small one. We're going to wait until March. So as Kevin Cry would say, buckle up.
We interviewed someone from the ACLU, mm-hmm. from the
That's another
civic,
organization.
Yeah, Civic Engagement and Democracy, you know, Project. And I was interviewing her about a range of things, but the message she kept coming back to was the not only the critical role of information and education, knowing what's going on and what's at stake, but believing that your vote counts and will be counted appropriately, and
yes.
how that, and that's happening on a national level,
yes.
right? That way it undermines our voice,
right?
The public voice.
Exactly right. You know, this Leonard Modi, who was recalled, and every time I write that sentence, I say in a lie-based recall. It sounds like editorializing, but it's not. It's a fact. That whole recall was based upon lies. Same thing with Karen Ramstrom. Terrible things they said about her. I will go to my grave and never get over either one of those things. But Leonard Modi said, people won't really start, the general public won't really start paying attention and rising up until their garbage isn't picked up. Until it's personal. So that's kind of where we are now. And right now, I think a lot of people are way up on a hill on a blanket having a picnic and just saying, life isn't that bad. I'm not affected. But eventually, it's like this sewage is seeping up and just rising. And eventually, it's going to touch the edge of their blanket and it's going to affect them. I just hope it's not too late. That sounds like hyperbole, but I mean that.
Mm-hmm. What do you see as effective strategies for organizations like ours, community groups or organizations who are concerned mm-hmm. about the kind of threats that elected, appointed officials, journalists are getting and concerned about the ability of everyone to have a voice and be heard?
Well, voting, as we talked about, but also show up. After my assault, I heard from a number of women older than I am who said, Donnie, next time you have to go to a meeting like that, you call us and we'll come with you. And I said, that's really sweet of you, but I don't want an entourage. And as a journalist, you're supposed to report the news, not make the news. So don't make any stand. Don't do anything that draws attention to yourself. Okay, I am knitting in solidarity for Kathy Darling Allen, but man, is that a great stress breaker during those meetings. But showing up, so I didn't want, and I had a guy who is like a karate guy, and he said, I'll go to meetings and I won't even sit next to you. I'll just stand in the crowd and watch. And at first I said, that's great. And then I thought, so let's play this through. Mark Kent comes over, grabs my camera, yanks it up, hangs me with my strap. I got a concussion and whiplash, by the way. And I don't know if you can tell when I'm talking, I feel like my speech is more halting. My neck is physically better, but my brain is not. So let's say somebody like Mark Kent comes up and assaults me, and then this karate guy is going to come up and try to get involved physically. These guys are all carrying weapons. I could not live with myself if somebody came to my defense and one of these guys just goes, I don't do karate, but I've got a gun. I couldn't do it. So you can show up, like there was a meeting right after the assault and I was wearing a neck brace and they mocked me for it. And it was a Patrick Jones meeting at the Holiday Inn. And there were a bunch of these women I know, retired school teachers in their 70s. They were just sitting in the audience. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. But it just was so it was such a great feeling to know they weren't going to get up. They were just witnesses. Sometimes the best you can do is bear witness, you know? You don't have to raise your voice, but just these guys don't want an audience to what they're doing. You know, I was the only media there that night. So, I mean, on July 6th. So sometimes just that, just bearing witness. I've often thought that, you know, that if you just, I mean, female, I don't know why, but female school teachers, man, they will take no nonsense, you know? And that's some of them have spoken at meetings and they're so eloquent and they're so funny. So just be there to bear witness and don't let people go alone. Like my friend who had his tire slashed, I felt so ashamed that I wasn't there that night with him, that I didn't go with him. And it was interesting. Somebody called me. I was going to go. And somebody I know who has ties to the militia said, made like an appointment with me. And so I couldn't go that night. And I wondered whether that was intentional. I don't know. So don't let people go alone, you know. And you don't have to be a tough person. You don't have to have a black belt in karate. Just go and show up and listen and watch so you can bear witness, so you can say, no, that is not what happened, or this is what happened, and that's the truth.
I heard you at Doug Craig's memorial how he would just come beside you.
Well, that was the weirdest thing. Doug Craig's office is right by the courthouse, and it was a hot day. I don't know why they have rallies on hot days, and it was against Modi and against the DA, and it was huge. It was organized by Woody Clendenin, the head of the militia, and that was a scary moment, and it was hot, and I was just taking notes, and they turned on me, calling me names, and I just thought, I'll just stand my ground and just keep writing. And then Doug Craig, who, as you know, passed away, and he used to write for News Cafe, great therapist, peacenik. I just felt this presence. Yeah, beautiful soul. And I just felt this presence behind me, and I really thought it was somebody who was going to hurt me. And I turned around. He's just standing there, as tall, like a crane, with his arms crossed, his baseball cap, this peaceful countenance. And what was weird about that is later I said to him, why are you here? And he goes, oh, I was just walking back from my office, and I noticed the crowd, and I was curious. So I walked up the steps of the courthouse, and I saw the crowd, and I saw what they were yelling at you, and I saw you in the middle of it, and I just thought I'd come and keep you company. I mean, that was kind of like a divine intervention as far as I was concerned. And I really did feel like he wasn't my bodyguard or anything, but the guys who were yelling at me and stuff, it's amazing what happens when a bunch of bullies are beating up on a woman and a man shows up. Amazing, isn't it? Pisses me off. And I did. He said, I'm going to walk you to your car. And I just was like, oh, Doug, come on. I'm a journalist. And it's like, my car's over here.
But thank you.
Yeah, and I appreciated that. But that's not the way I was trained as a journalist. You should not need a freaking bodyguard to walk you to your car when all you're doing is covering a story.
Mm-hmm. You've said this in a number of different ways, but I just have to ask you directly, is what motivates you to keep going?
Well, I have like my identical twin, my son who started the website. Many times they're like, what are you doing? Is it enough? You're going to get yourself killed. You know, my daughter said that to me recently. Are you trying to be a martyr? And I think I have always had a very strong sense of justice. I was horrible childhood. Mother committed suicide when I was 12. We were put in a horrible foster home that was worse than our conditions with our mother, but the home looked perfect. Big house, clean sheets, ho-hos and ding-dongs and cookie jars. And I was always, as a kid, I read Nancy Drew, and I have a very strong sense of solving a crime, justice, what's right, what's wrong. And being raised in that foster home where people didn't see how it really was, there was a caseworker, I don't think she's alive anymore, but at one point she came over to check on myself and my four sisters after our mom died. And the foster mother brought cookies on a tray, a silver tray, and she left the room. And I turned to the social worker and I go, listen, this is not how it is. All the stuff you see around here, the silver and the drapes and everything, they're abusive, you know. I told her what was happening to us, every kind of abuse you could imagine. And she goes, "You ungrateful child. Do you know how many kids would love to live in a place like this?" And that was like, that was a defining moment for me. So I, my philosophy is, and so I won't stop until subscribers stop supporting me and I can't do it anymore, or until the stories stop, or until someone stops me, because it's, we're not done. We're in the middle of a war. I know it sounds extreme, and I'm not trying to be a winner. I'm just trying to tell the truth. And so that's why I'm so infuriated when you hear people telling stories about things that are not true. It just bugs me to no end. So that's what I'm doing. I'm going to tell the truth as long as I can. And until the day I wake up and say, I can't do this anymore. And I'm not a masochist, you know, seriously, but I do get it. I'm not a martyr, and I'm not like wringing my hands going, "Oh, this is so hard. I woke up this morning and put my back of my hand against my head and it's such hard work." Baloney. I feel strong. I feel committed. I feel driven. I feel like I have a mission. And I know that what I'm doing makes a difference, you know? So, and I enjoy it. Like those 8-hour meetings, it's like going to the circus. It is. And I want to get it right when I report back how the circus was.
Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, how are you trying to navigate the messiness of it all?
Well, like I mentioned earlier, I have girlfriends. I have my sister. I take a girlfriend's trip to Plymouth, California. You should go there. We just sit around, drink wine. We take walks. You know, I am really good about decompressing. And like I said, you know, if I pull an all-nighter, which I often will do, write a story all night long, like I will finish it at 9 a.m. so I can make it before the 10 a.m. email notifications go out. I put on my Hollywood shades, close the blind, turn off my phone, and I go to sleep for as long as I need. You know, so I'm not going to kill myself over this, you know. Mm-hmm. I do what I have to do to take care of myself, you know. And I have a lot of fun in life. This is not my entire life, you know. It's a job. And I'm really lucky I can keep my own hours and do what I want. I get to choose my stories. So do the reporters, by the way. I say I don't pay them enough to assign stories. But we kind of have beats, so everybody does their thing.
I usually ask people when we have a little bit of time if there's anything you wish I had asked you, or anything that we didn't talk about that you would like to say as we end.
You're a great interviewer. As much as I am, I believe that being a female journalist has made me the target of even more vociferous, you know, attacks and death threats. I have noticed some of the most powerful people in this fight are women. Kathy Darling Allen, our Registrar of Voters. Stephanie Bridget is our district attorney. Mary Rickert, who I just, she's my hero. And you know what? I'm a Democrat. She's a Republican. And we're in the same fight. This is not about politics, partisan anymore. But, and a lot of these people who speak at supervisors meeting, and I don't want to denigrate the men or say there aren't men because there are some awesome men, but I find that a lot of the strongest, bravest people involved in this fight are women. And I don't know if it's because of historically women having you know, their own abuse or being downtrodden more than men, or they can relate to it, but they're like, no, here are the rules, this is what we want. You're vomiting on the furniture, you're destroying the house, and we're not going to put up with it. And I'm just so, when I look out sometimes in the meetings, it's like lots and lots of retired, strong women of both parties, Republicans and Democrats. What's happening here is serious, and people will say, oh, that's happening in Montana or Idaho. And it's like, not like this. I'll bet you don't have a son of a billionaire funding that effort. You know, but you don't have an entire production company doing a docuseries for the blueprint. I'll bet you don't. So we are being made an example of, and people have a choice. They can either leave or they can say, no, this is my home. This is where my people are. I'm going to stay and fight. And fighting can take all those forms that we talked about, bearing witness, showing up, you know, supporting you know, people who are telling the truth, you know, and voting. For God's sake, please vote.
Donnie, thank you so much for coming today and for all of your work and for sharing with us.
Thank you for all the great questions and for having me. I appreciate it.
Sure. You've been listening to Bending the Arc, an offering of the Shasta Equal Justice Coalition and sponsored by KKRN, kkrn.org, community radio out of Bella Vista, Round Mountain, and Redding.
Sisters, please get ready. Brothers, sisters, please get ready. Brothers, sisters, please get ready. For the time is drawing near. Oh, there'll be signs and wonders. Oh, there'll be signs and wonders. Oh, there'll be signs and wonders. For the start over with.